Until you find a groove getting hired for narrative projects, most directors make their money in the non-scripted world. How can you make the most from your time doing non-scripted work? How can you help your interview subjects feel at ease? How do you know what B-roll to film? How can you keep your set running smoothly? And how does all of that translate to your narrative film work? We'll talk about all that and more with TV director Steve Abramson on this episode of the Working Director Podcast. This is the Working Director Podcast, the show that helps you go from emerging filmmaker to working director. As a filmmaker living in Los Angeles, I've directed over 130 projects, including 6 distributed feature films, all while helping filmmakers figure out how to level up in their careers. I do this show with one goal in mind, to help you become a working director. And if you want to join us for the live Q&A sessions and ask all of your questions, make sure you join our free private Facebook group by going to theworkingdirector.pro. Steve, let's start with, what's a fun story that comes to mind about your non-scripted TV days?
First of all, we're all telling stories, whether it's non-scripted or not. And the non-scripted part is generally false because I've had to write many a non-script for that kind of thing. I did a show called the Disney Teacher Awards, and we had to go out all over the country and do profiles of teachers from all grade levels.
I love that.
And it was a real, for Disney, it wasn't intended to be a money-making thing. It was meant to be a kind of service thing. Actually, it was Michael Eisner's baby when he was in charge. And wow, that was eye-opening. Not only are there great teachers all over the country, but it was really fun to tell their stories. Basically, one day to scowl, go into the classroom, hang out, take notes, no crew. Next day, shoot the whole thing. And probably like an 8 to 12 hour day, just dependent, you know, always looking not to go overtime, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
One thing I kind of took a note from all the movies I've watched and subscribing to American Cinematographer, which I would suggest anybody do because you can learn a lot about movie making from the technical angle, is from shots I've seen in movies, how can I recreate that without all the equipment? So we have a cart, you know, to roll equipment around, that kind of thing. And I found this big ballroom, like a dancing type ballroom. And I had a teacher. I put her at one end of the cart, and I was leaning on the other end of the cart with the shooter, you know, over her shoulder. And I had I had like one PA, and he rolled the cart around this big circular oval-shaped dance floor slowly. And when we got to the beginning, he would just keep going. So what the shot was is you're watching this person answer questions and looking kind of all, just off camera, and the whole background is moving the entire time, and it's like it just looked amazing, and it certainly added interest to the shot. That's one of those examples of bringing something back to an editor, and they went, "What? How did you do that?" And I'm thinking, well, it's kind of like, you know, getting in a shopping cart, have someone push you with a camera, that kind of thing.
So I mean, clever. Would you say that when it comes to doing non-scripted like that, is it harder trying to get a good interview from sort of non-talent, or is it harder trying to create those interesting shots on the limited budget that non-scripted has?
Well, that's a great question. The shot part is just my trying to be creative, okay? The interview, it doesn't matter if they're, you know, a celebrity or they're a civilian. It is tough. Interviewing looks easy, and some interviews can really be crap, you know, depending on the interviewer more than the interviewee. So there's a real skill to being able to interview. And there are different types of interviews too. For an interview show, like a Dr. Phil that I worked on for years, you know, the interview is sort of the spine of the whole piece, because you go back to that kind of thing. But it's very specific what we want to impart in terms of what the story is. You know, we have questions in mind, and we do our best to try to get those questions. And a long form interview is, you know, like I did for the TV Academy's archive interviews, I don't have to get them to say things. They can say anything they want, and they don't have to have a complete sentence, because I'm mic'd, and people who watch can hear the question. That's not really true with most TV shows. On a show that you only have a limited amount of time to kind of meet the civilian guests that you're interviewing, while the crew's setting up, I get my first shot and say, can you go like this, do this in this corner of the house, wherever it is, outdoors. And then I spend that time trying to warm up the guest, basically, and try to take away any fears they have, because they always have fears, which are, I'm going to look stupid. Somebody in my neighborhood is going to make fun of me. I have nothing to say, nothing to say. And I always say, everybody has a story. I don't care who you are. Everybody has a story. And my job is just to help you tell your story and try to, you know, make those fears go away. So once they get into a comfort zone, it's much easier to do the question.
Are there tips you can give for people who are trying to get into non-scripted, or they're going to be doing their first interviews? Are there tips on ways that you would get the guest comfortable?
Yeah, first of all, before the camera rolls, tell them that what your goal is. Bring them in on what the magic is, so in terms of what your goals are. Don't make it a secret, because the less they know and the more kind of freaked out they get. So that's just a general tip. But it's also how you ask a question. There are questions that can be confrontational and can become combative. And there are questions that it feels like more of a collaboration. And if you had a long day and you're tired, find a way to be pumped up, because basically an interview subject will reflect what energy you give them. So Jen, like, what do you do? What's your job? I mean, do you have fun doing it? Tell me, what's cool about it.
It's almost like you're excited to know about me, and that makes me want to talk to you more. Absolutely.
And also, don't lean back in the chair and go, sit forward. If you sit, if you sit up, they are energized. And those are just little tricks that are like body language tricks, and the way you, the way you speak, basically.
I also noticed that when I do the interviews, I try to remember to have a smile on my face.
Yeah.
Because sometimes our resting face looks like we're bored.
Yeah.
So I have a conscious, like, yes, smile and nod kind of situation I do when I'm doing interviews.
That's key. And what you said is funny, because sometimes we are bored, but it's like that makes us performers.
So whenever I do interview type situations of any kind of project, I try to keep the interviews 30 minutes max for the person. I try to keep our day short if I can, like a 4-hour day, because I don't think people understand how exhausting it is on both sides.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I can speak about both lengths of interviews. A news interview, I directed news in three markets. I started local TV. So I was in Norfolk, Virginia, Louisville, and then LA. And it's amazing how great news people are when they go out in the field. They ask 6 questions, 8 questions, boom, 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 boom. And now sometimes they're one-man-woman bands. So they have to go out and shoot it sometimes, depending on the market. It's getting cheaper and cheaper. But it's done. It's done efficiently. It's done quickly. It's, forget a half hour, it's 5 minutes, and they get what they need. Come back with an editor, sit with them, cut it, and it's ready for air. It's phenomenal. I'm just going to go ahead and use, Dr. Phil's show as an example. When I first started on it, I was there at the beginning. We wrote what we kind of called dream scripts. They were like what the script would be in a script, because, we let the people tell the story. In sightings, we actually had, voiceover in between the sound bites that kind of set up what we're trying to do and whatever, but in the Dr. Phil world, we let the people tell their story. But to get there, you have to ask the right questions. So it was very efficient at the beginning. And somewhere along the line, it got longer and longer and longer. There was this whole sort of, fear of, if I miss one thing, I'm going to get yelled at. It's just kind of a pressure. And so literally, I have done 100 questions in one interview. And we're sitting at midnight with like a teenager doing, and yes, everyone's exhausted and it's unnecessary. But I'm a fan of keeping it as brief as you can and getting what you need.
Harpreet asks, for non-scripted videos, you just show up with your camera truck and ask, okay, what are we going to shoot today?
I do homework. That's all. I have a book, a notebook, do my homework before I arrive. I highlight things, the names of the people. I go in there and I want to know the names of my crew and the names of the people I'm interviewing before I even step in the door. And then I call them by their names. People like to be called by their names. When I'm driving to the airport afterwards, it's like my mind is erased. I can't even remember the names of the people I talk to, but it's key to know who you're with. It gives them importance to say your name. Be prepared. Have a plan. I have my, questions, everything highlighted. I'm very efficient with my notebook.
Do you go in and go, I know exactly how I want this lit, where I'm going to put them in the shot, what B-roll I want, or do you start figuring that out as you get there?
No, if I figured it out when I was there, I'd be 3 days, shooting 3 days. I have a B-roll list. I have I have an idea of what I want to get. In terms of the interview shot, that's something I scout instantly as soon as I get there. We look around with the shooter, looking at places. Sometimes it's a mess. I mean, a dump. And you have to figure a way to hide stuff, because it's like, a shot like you, might be two people in the shot or just one. But just trying to find a background or make a background, And, it's hard to not be use the same kind of backgrounds, like there's a lamp in the back and boring. But, if you can make it interesting, right. But my goal is from the time I get there, I want to be rolling 1 hour later, no more than one hour later. Sometimes the sheet they have back at wherever the production office is, they have a half hour because a lot of people who are like preparing it and pre-interviewing have never been in the field. So they don't have a clue of how to do it. So I've been screwed many times by that. And you have to be able to figure out places to take shortcuts. But have a plan. I find a place quickly. The shooters do this all the time. So they kind of know what to look for. There are times where I go, could you find a place for me? I have to go talk to the guest, that kind of thing. But B-roll, I have a list exactly what I need for the B-roll. It can vary a little bit. There are things that can drop off here, and some things are, generic, like walking. So I know the shots, you have them, your back pedal, you're behind them. Yeah, I'm always looking for creative ways to shoot B-roll because when you do a show a long time, it's like, and the editors are,
It sounds like you definitely try to be creative and unique. We had Jason Satterlund on once where he said when he would do these sort of corporate gigs, they could be boring, but he would go, this is my mini movie within my big movie. Like, this is my DNA movie in Jurassic Park. So he would find interesting ways to shoot that, which actually got him more work because he was being so creative. I think that's really something that filmmakers don't think about because they think, oh, I just need the talking head shot and some B-roll. And I like that you're pointing out, no, be creative.
And also, if you are a fan of movies, and I would think most directors are, or anything you see, visual, TV, streaming, whatever, steal from something that inspires you. I mean, there's a famous shot in Jaws where, I forgot the actor's name, but he's sitting on the beach and the kit. And I always get mixed up whether it's like the dolly is being pushed forward and the camera lens is big, it's being zoomed back, or the opposite. It's then zooming in and then pulling it. And you know what I mean? It's weird. The thing is, the background goes like that.
Yeah.
And the face is steady. It's steady. I've done that on shots of just for B-roll of people because it's just a fun shot. And
that's a really good point. Filmmakers, especially with the working director, a lot of our directors, you guys are all working to get any kind of directing gig. And those directing gigs tend to be non-scripted. They tend to be interviews and such. Interviews, B-roll. Why not use that time to learn to be a better filmmaker? You love like Steve says, you love a shot in a movie. Here's your chance to try it in a less, stressful situation and a less pressure situation and find things that you like. David says, I'm a producer that will have the opportunity to direct a couple of episodes of nonfiction travel series I'm producing. Aside from the incredible insight you've already provided, is there anything else you would impart on a first-time non-scripted director?
Travel shows are amazing because you're outdoors a lot and there's amazing stuff to shoot. So just shoot the hell out of it. I mean, and get that at the least because the beauty of it And now drones are being used.
I was
going to
say, drones.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, drones make it look like you're making a $50 million feature film, and all you do is hire a drone operator, and they are good. They are expert. And you get a shot. I mean, I did House Hunters International, and they added drones. So now a home, when they have a home that they're looking at, you know, you got the drone shot over. It's just incredible. But yeah, so for travel, I mean, it's almost like a no-brainer. You can spend a lot of time doing it. But yeah, just look around you. Look around you if you don't have specific shots. The interview is just one piece of it. It's important because you want people to talk about things. But then you got to fill it out. And sometimes you need little recreations too. There's a bit of reality that's not things that still happen, like The Bachelor, let's say. I mean, yes, they're real people. That's kind of sometimes the only real part. But, you know, there's a scene where there's a woman and a man sitting on a bench and they're talking, flirting, maybe they'll make out, whatever. And then all of a sudden another guy walks in and says, "Can I borrow Sue?" Well, that's not spontaneous. It's a producer right at the side going, "Okay, ready? Go." You know, so that's the reality of reality TV, is that they're real people. And that's kind of it. Or else you're not going to have a TV show. It's going to be boring. But the travel shows, there's like, it's a great show to do. I've done them where, yeah, there's so much to see. You know, when I do B-roll with people, I try to do it outdoors of a building because it's just so much better. It just looks so much better.
When you're shooting, and travel is actually a good sample because it's I don't say basic, but it's like the basic, like you get your B-roll, you have your talking head, right? Typically.
Yeah.
How do you plan your story for that? So like, is that something that the producers have decided ahead of time, the story they want to tell? If something happens in the interview, how often are you switching what the story is you're telling?
Depending on what the show is. Let's say it's a cooking show, like where the host goes around to a different culture and tries different foods and that kind of thing. So the story you're telling kind of tells itself in some what you want to kind of script out. They're like story beats, really. But if they're narrated, somebody writes a script, whether it's the host or someone writes for the host. But basically, well, if we're in, let's say, Bangkok, we want to see a little bit of the culture of Bangkok just with B-roll shots, just to get a flavor. And things used to be slower in terms of how you move. And a lot of times they're kind of, I call MTV fast. MTV kind of introduced a real tabata kind of thing. You want to set the stage quickly. And then you get into where your host is interacting, that kind of thing. Another thing about reality and unscripted is you often shoot a hell of a lot more because you don't get what you need sometimes, just like action, cut. So editors who do reality are really, really good because they can look through hours of material. A show like Survivor, some of those really high-end reality shows, they shoot a lot of footage, and it's done beautifully. The production values were pretty amazing on those shows. You go out knowing what you want to get, you know, and that helps to solve the problems. It's just doing it in a short amount of time. I've shadowed on a bunch of drama shows. I never got to direct one, but shows back in the 90s like ER and NYPD Blue and stuff like that. And the producer or the director of an ER episode, Chris Chulak, I had a meeting with him after, you know, being on set for about 8 days. And he says, "So what do you do? What do you do?" And I explained one day shooting kind of unscripted. And by the what I was describing, you know, going out, meeting people the first time, often meeting a crew I've never met, having three people, getting all this stuff, getting a 7-minute segment in like 12 hours, he was shocked, you know. And, you know, I've always believed if you start out in reality and move to scripted, you're much better equipped. Because if you can work fast, then it's easy enough to slow down. And like feature, when Quentin Tarantino did an episode of ER, he had a bad time because it was an eight-day shoot, and he's used to doing features where you take a lot more time. So it was a struggle for everyone, crew, him, actors, everybody. But that's, to me, just proves that if you are used to working with a lot of time, it's hard to speed it up even to do an episode of something.
And the crazy thing is, non-scripted is as crazy as it is, the hours, the pace, it actually gets paid so much less.
That's been a frustration. I mean, I feel like I'm paid well, but nothing like, I mean, to me, it'd be a dream. I directed a kind of a staged version of a comedy for kind of just kind of working it out kind of thing. But I love working with actors, and I wish I had a lot more experience doing it.
I do feel like you, besides podcast interviewing, like I've done a lot of interview shoots for clients.
Yeah, right.
And I do feel like if you can work with normal people, quote unquote, normal, like not actors,
yeah,
and get them comfortable and get them energetic, it's only honing your skills for directing actors.
Absolutely.
Just another benefit.
Absolutely. Because they come prepared and we don't have to get into how to direct actors. But there's so much you can take from it. You have to think on your feet. I mean, if you're doing a feature, great. You got time to do things, work it out. A lot of pressure, but there's way more time for the director to work out what he or she is doing. Yeah, so it's the first thing I really directed was news, a newscast at a TV station. And I won't even tell you what the weekly salary was, but it was hardly anything. And I felt like I would have paid them because it was like an education at this station because I could edit and learn all kinds of things. But I came in as a camera person, a studio camera person, and 7 months later I was directing the weekend news. And when I saw someone directing, I freaked out because if you've ever been in a booth for a news show, it's like the Wild West. It's like crazy. It's like any live event too, like an award show. It's chaos. And then what you see on TV is just smooth as a bell. When I finally did the news, I was able to do it. I could multitask. Passion really will get you far when people see that. They see it. So, there are directors who are successful who are grumpy and in a bad mood or abusive to crews, but I've always felt they don't work as much as the ones that, I've heard of a lot now. There are a lot of people with power who will hire a director or anybody, a crew, even an actor, and go, we have a no asshole policy here. I've always believed that. I've not always been able to be the one who could say that.
It's sad that we have to say it, but yeah.
But I like the way you use the word kick ass because it's like, then after, it's like a positive thing because sometimes the job is about kicking your own ass to get things done too.
We have one from David. He says, any tips on working with hosts and getting them focused when you're on location?
Well, the host kind of knows the deal before they arrive. I mean, they know what the show is typically. You're not having to really tell them a lot of stuff. But what I tell hosts who are any different levels of fame, okay, be really like Dr. Phil is pretty famous. And then there are a slew of shows, travel shows, HGTV shows, and some people wouldn't know anything. But all the hosts are kind of empowered by, they're kind of the star of the show. One thing I try to tell them, because if you're a director that's new to them, which can often be the case, they have a lot that they're thinking about that can make it difficult for them, for you, for everybody. So what I try to do to empower a host or a star, whoever it is that's kind of the focus of leading us through the show, is I come up, and by the way, when I have conversations, I try to keep them private. I don't do them, I'll announce
it. Pull the host aside.
Yeah. And I tell them what my job is. My job is to tell the story and also to do anything it takes to make this easy for you. Okay. I'm here to support you. I let them know that right up front because they love hearing that. And it's honest too. I don't like to lie about things. I try to, I don't want to talk about it, I just won't talk about it. But yeah, I try to empower the host and make them feel like they can lean on me, they can talk to me, they can trust me, and I'm there for them. Not in a way that's like egotistical, just to help them get through the show. because they've got a lot on them too. I mean, Dr. Phil, people don't know that he's shy. I work really well with him because I kind of learned early on, if I can help him, that's gonna serve me too, you know. So I try to read people, and I don't try to make it about me, you know, me. I try to make it about serving whatever it is, the project it is. So for him, I'll ask him, you know, at first it's almost like you feel like you have to beg, but you don't. It's like, if I can think of something that will help, that's simple and quick, I'll say it, you know, I'll say it. And he got to trust me. And I did a lot of shoots with him to where for the beginning, it was like, hey, do you think, is it okay if you do that a lot too? He would say, what do you need, Steve? I mean, that's like amazing to me. And I go, well, I need you to, if you could just do this real setup here. And I give him a blue card with like five words on it. Doesn't want anything written out. But he's good. He's a first take guy. And he says, well, I have to get in there. We have to do this. I said, oh, no problem. See, I already have the camera rolling when the car drives up that he gets out of. There's no blah, 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 let's fudge with this, put the tape in. No. I'm rolling. It back then, before it was even, you know, to a cart or a cartridge or something digital, it was, you know, tape. So I'm rolling and prepared. And I go, well, I'm rolling right now. It'll take you 30 seconds. And he goes, oh, okay, Steve. And then he does it. And it's like, I helped him. If he mispronounces a word, I don't say, you mispronounce that. I say, it might be this. I think I've heard it this way. Do you mind just doing by saying it both ways? And that way we have it just in case. I know it's wrong, but I'm not going to say you're wrong. I'm going to just say, you know, I'm not the smartest one in the room, but I think it's said this way. And then, you know what I mean? It's like, it's not confrontational.
There's two things I want to point to the audience who is watching and listening. One is that you mentioned you're there to be of service and you let them know that. Anytime you have directors, I'm telling you, you have, and producers, Dave, when you're on set, if you have imposter syndrome or anything that's making you feel like the pressure, take that pressure off instantly by putting it on the service. How am I serving this production? How can I serve my actors, my hosts, my guests, whoever it is? That is so important. And two, when he talks about, when Steve mentioned the thing about hosts and talking to them, saying, I'm here for you. I do that with my actors on set too. I think it's always important to make everybody feel comfortable and know you're there for them. And it's going to take a lot of pressure off. Unfortunately, we are out of time, but you've given us such great information. I really appreciate it. For those of you who are maybe watching a replay or didn't get your questions answered, please put them in the comments still. And Steve and I will get in there and give answers and thoughts and keep the conversation going.
Thanks, Janet. And be kind to your crew, too.
Be kind
to your crew.
Always. Especially when you're doing these tiny, tiny, non-scripted shows where it's like three of you and it's exhausting. I've bought many a lunches and breakfasts on my own dime that were not production funds.
This is a ball. I could talk all day. I talk a lot, but you're creative and you're smart. It's really a joy to talk to you.
Thank you. I really appreciate your time and I appreciate everybody who watched. Thanks, guys, for your great questions.
Thanks for listening to the Working Director Podcast. If you like what you're hearing, please rate and review as it helps others find the show and helps us keep making great content for you. And if you want even more help with your directing career, check out theworkingdirector.pro, where you can apply to be part of the accelerator that hones in on where you currently are and helps you get to where you want to be. Whether it's this podcast, the accelerator, or our free Facebook community for directors, we're here to help you get to work.